Now we have Dr. Mary Carnell. She has over 25 years of experience in maternal, newborn, and child health in every geographic area of the world. She is a physician with MPH who completed her residency in preventive medicine at the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. She lived 15 years overseas as director of USAID, funded projects in Bangladesh, Madagascar, Ethiopia, and now resides in US since 2006. She currently directs JSI's Center for Maternal, Newborn, and Child Health, and she'll be telling us about health systems, health workers, and communities. We can't reach MDG4 without them all. So please welcome Dr. Carnell. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you all for coming. It is the last day, and it's the first session of the morning, so you get a lot of congratulations there. So it's a great pleasure to be with you today and actually to bring the work forward. I think it's nice to come at the end of this wonderful panel. Thank you all to be on this panel together. Because it's another perspective on the MDGs. This is an MDG 4 presentation, and I think my experience personally, I was the project director out in Ethiopia for 5 years, so I have a good feeling of what, and Ethiopia was a special country. I don't know how many are from Ethiopia in the audience. Anybody from Ethiopia? Okay, good. Usually there's several. So I'll move along and use this one for down or this one for down. Left one. Okay, very good. Thank you. I moved this slide forward. It's usually at the end because I know we're short on time, and I think the most important message to take home, it was the partnership. And it wasn't, and the leadership by the Ministry of Health and the regional health bureaus. So it's decentralized, and the regions have up to 25 million people in each region, 18, 16. So they're really like small, I should say, average-sized African countries just in the region. So the leadership at that level is very important, the ownership and the vision. But it couldn't have been done alone with just the resources, both technical and financial, that the ministry had. So the partnerships from UNICEF, WHO, USAID, lots of NGOs, it was really a very collaborative effort. And I would give an awful lot of credit to the families, the communities, the households, and the very large network of volunteers that were created to help out, and the volunteers were just family members themselves. So just to put that up front, and for things we won't cover in this very short presentation, there's information on our website as well as some of the work we've done. So go forward. A quick outline of what we'll cover today, a little background. I mean, I'm taking you back. This will be more of a story, taking us back to 2003 and coming forward up to 2008, which was the span of this project, and a very dynamic time in Ethiopia because of several initiatives the government was undertaking. Okay. A quick step back in time to 2003. We had the first Lancet series on child survival, came out in June of 2003, and it put Ethiopia right in spotlight. And it wasn't very popular for the political leaders to see that they were in the group of the sixth, they were sixth in the list of the highest in the world for child deaths. So nearly 500,000 child deaths every year. And the good news is that about 3/4 of them were preventable or easily treatable with low-cost interventions. So they saw, the map was there, and this was actually unlike, I think, the MDG 5, which left out family planning, which was a major first thing to do in terms of maternal mortality. So MDG 5 may have held people back initially until it got back on, you know, to get family planning in it later. The child health MDG was on target. Debate could be of should every country all have to do 2/3 reduction, but by putting it out there, it was overly ambitious for many. For Ethiopia, it made them move. So that was another experience for MDGs. Why? Why are so many dying if it could be prevented? Well, the Lancet, again, put out, for the most part, they left immunization off a bit because it had already been attained but not necessarily maintained in many countries. But some of the chief evidence-based interventions were put there, but the Lancet also said you have to, you know, theoretically drive them up to maximum coverage. So when they looked at the numbers of deaths that could be saved, it was based on a 99% coverage, a theoretical coverage. Well, none of the countries had that kind of coverage of the main interventions. But to give an idea of where, according to the Demographic and Health Survey in Ethiopia in 2000 and followed in 2005, we'll have some 2011 information after, you see that they were far from that theoretical high line of where you needed to go. And some were pitifully low, like bed nets, and others were still not acceptable, half the kids getting vitamin A. So these were the goals, these were the targets, how to move these up. And I want to bring the good news right here, which is Ethiopia was rather shockingly announced in September of this year with the UNICEF progress report that they had reached MDG4, not only reached it, but reached it early. So here we are in 2013. This is based on 2011 data that was confirmed after looking at it many times, so that they were ahead of target. And this is rather amazing. So we're talking about dropping from, you know, a half million deaths a year to now they're down to about 250,000. Okay. How did Ethiopia do it? Two main initiatives were underway by the Ministry of Health. And I have to say, the Health Extension Worker Program was informed by the Prime Minister and the Minister of Health and a couple other high levels going to India. So they actually were informed by the Aisha program in India with paid health workers, too, at the community level. And they even brought some Indians over to Ethiopia to help them design a curriculum. And then it had to be translated back into, you know, English. It was going in different directions. Just to say that this was an effort knowing that they were out of reach. Most of the population, 50% of the population, was more than a two-hour walk from the nearest health center. Not even talking about what quality the health center is in, what staffing, what drugs were there or not there, equipment. They were still 2 hours or more away. So the Health Extension Worker Program was designed to bring these 32, and now it's up to 38,000, because they've gone urban as well, to bring two paid workers within 30 minutes of everyone in their community. They initially were meant to do only preventive, promotive, and very basic curative. That has inched up over the years, and they're now doing integrated community case management, which included, it took 6 years to get the ministry allow cotrimoxazole to be used for childhood pneumonia, but they are now doing that, and moving quickly to doing newborn sepsis with injectable gentamicin by these young women. It is all women, so it's a very gender equality. There was a lot of push. I was living there at the time when the men were pushing back and said, no, we'll go 50-50, one man, one woman. The Prime Minister said, no, we'll do 75% women. And finally he said, no, we'll do 100% women. So it was not only owned and led by the Ministry of Health, but by the Prime Minister. So this was very important. The second major initiative they had was accelerating the development of primary health care units. A unit really meant to have a health center and five satellite health posts where the extension workers would reside, but actually be out doing a lot door to door and in the households, not sitting stationary in a health post. It includes some system strengthening where a lot of partners were involved to help in the strengthening logistics, health information systems, and the supervision would be coming from the health center out to the extension worker. It's very important, and Ethiopia benefited from a very important enabling environment. And these are the basic points. I mentioned the Lancet series helped to kind of set the path for many. USAID benefited from having had 7 to 10 years work in Madagascar, where again I was very happy to have been part of that, working with BASICS and a bilateral project, where they really honed down a volunteer model. When I arrived in Ethiopia, they were struggling. They didn't believe in volunteerism. They were studying Almata, you know, it was very theoretical. The project I inherited was spending 2 years trying to figure out what are we going to do at the community level. And I said, well, why don't we just invite some of the folks over from Madagascar to share what they've done and see. I said, this is different. This is inviting parents to do a very lightweight, you know, benefit your family first, and if it works for you, tell your neighbors about it. And so this was a very different approach. It wasn't about 40-hour work week, volunteer, and being criticized for working so hard and getting nothing. So we also had the Global Child Survival Partnership. This Ethiopia and India were the first two countries where UNICEF, WHO, World Bank, CEDA, USAID agreed at the global level to partner to try to bring their country offices on board to push child survival work forward. And so they came out to stir us up in Ethiopia. That stirred up the Ministry of Health to get a technical working group going. So instead of each of us going to the Ministry of Health and trying to get our agenda and our project objectives met, it meant that we all worked together in a collaborative way. And we had to push the minister, to be honest, to take the leadership at that level and chair the meeting and call the meeting. But with that peer support, it became kind of a fun group. And I think we have to make our groups fun. If people aren't having fun and collegial, then they don't come anymore. So, you know, it became a little bit of a club, and we enjoyed working together. We worked way over and above the hours that we would need to. We went out to the field together. We launched things together, and it made a certain momentum. There was a large national child survival strategy that this group worked on, but we had a couple consultants who could work on it full time while we were busy with our work. So that enabling environment made a very big difference. Three-pillar strategy. I think it's shorter as the day gets longer, isn't it? I'll go just quickly that we worked in these three areas, and we worked on them simultaneously. We didn't jump to the community and forget about the systems. We didn't only do health worker training and supervision. It was a kind of simultaneous phasing in one program after another. Okay, three large regions covering about 15 million population was the breadth of the project. Health extension needs the community. I've mentioned this. At the end of the program, we had about 54,000 volunteers, and we, as soon as the health extension workers started graduating and arriving in our areas, then we transitioned the program from being a health center-led to being a health extension worker-led. So she would help in the recruitment, training, supervision, and that was a much stronger model to have. These were her arms and legs, and if they would do their work, come back and have meetings, she could train them on another area. Health systems input, healthcare financing was important at the national level. Then it translated down to the region and health areas, the health centers, HMIS, logistics, health worker strengthening. We did immunization refresher training 1 year all over. Then it was nutrition, essential nutrition actions, particularly the breastfeeding, vitamin A, complementary feeding. And then IMNCI came last because we're pushing for that pneumonia treatment to be in it. We didn't want to stop before pneumonia was there. And then supportive supervision, performance improvement. Jump to the results. Big household surveys were done at the beginning and at the end, and we were able then. The ministry, of course, wanted not only in the 15 million we were covering, they wanted it also with the other 10 million in those regions that were outside our reach of our project. And so we did a huge control to be able to give them a weighted average. There were three additional survey instruments. Again, there's not time to detail anything. These are all on our website. So if you're interested in a synthesis across these three regions, you can find that there. So what happened over those 5 years? You see there's a bounce in almost everything. Measles is not quite as much of a bounce because there had been a lot of campaigns at the baseline that had happened that had driven up measles. But the DPT-3 gives a better idea of the bounce. But this is a weighted average across intervention and non-intervention areas. What I'll show you now, next, are the changes, and this is a little bit interesting analysis. It's called difference in differences. It's a wonderful logistic regression analysis that allows you to subtract away the rapid movement that was also going on in the control area. Because extension workers were everywhere, the big volunteer push was not everywhere. So the volunteers are a big reason why things were going up, but not only. The systems, the supervision, the encouragement there. So there were 8.4 percentage points net difference at end, which was statistically significant in the DPT-3 coverage, or DTP-3, either way it can go. Vitamin A, look at the slope again. The ESHI slope is the project area. The non-ESHI is the large control. So we're now at about 10 percentage points difference, and these were controlled on maternal education and several other variables to see what the net change was. So this started out lower in the ESHI areas. We were in a less favorable area for vitamin C, and it drove up. Some of that is also due to having the product available. Latrines, this is a huge area for the government. This is one of their number one. The Prime Minister said, you know, if we could, you know, get latrines and better hygiene, 80% of our public health problems would be over. So they were really pushing on latrines. You see, we started lower and went above. The slope of the line is what's important here. Measles, again, 13 percentage points net difference at the end. IMCI facility survey, you can look through these. Good improvements across. WHO came in for the end line. They said they hadn't seen this kind of change anywhere in Africa. And so that was optimistic, and it was this continuous, it wasn't the training. It was a six-day of ridge training. It was the continuous supervision and going out and encouraging and doing things in place. So training's good, it's not enough. Selected findings from the other surveys, again, it's about supervision going up, and particularly for child health, observing case management, not looking through booklets, but watching people. That was very important, observing case management, and again, another chance for a refresher training on the spot. Conclusions in the last slides, I think we're in good timing. The government vision, just to insist that ownership, leadership, and some of that international push for the MDG-4 was important for them. The minister became, I think, the co-chair for the malaria work. He was co-chair on several things globally. Global Fund, so he was always getting, you know, mentored or encouraged. The health systems, the health worker, the household practices, they're all needed. We can't just do health systems. We can't just do health workers. And we can't just do community. I think it was synergistic. But this teaming up, as we go into the future, there's a huge push for the million community health workers and so forth and so on. If I can put in my plea, this model of having a couple paid workers, full-time, who can really encourage, mentor, and support volunteers who need to be lightweight, do their family first, do their neighbors second, but keep pulling them together and encourage them. It's a wonderful model. And other countries could do it if they decided to prioritize that resource. That we're asking an awful lot of unpaid workers to become mini health, you know, doctors. And just to say that this could be encouragement for other resource-constrained countries to think about. Thank you so much, and I did have time to throw it up again. Thank the partners. Thank you very much.